We'll start with item one, please.
Item one, from the Office of the Comptroller, Audit Services, Department of Administrative Services, Risk Management and Facilities Management, providing a post-incident informational update on the courthouse fire. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Hare, you're the only one eager to come to the table and get us started.
Courageous.
Well, we were read first in the item, so I thought I'd come up first.
No problem. Anyone else is welcome as they're ready.
First of all, I want to just let you know that Comptroller Mansky is at an audit forum this morning welcoming some of my colleagues from the six-state region to a day-and-a-half conference here, so that's why he's not in attendance. But I did have a chance to discuss with him a letter that I received from Chairwoman Dmitrievich and Supervisor Mayo asking us to do an audit of situations surrounding the fire. And after discussing with Mr. Mansky, it just makes sense for an incident of this nature and magnitude that we do so. So it is our plan to conduct a review, an audit, look at the cause of the fire in terms of any of the issues surrounding maintenance or whatever, and to look at the response, both immediate with the dispatch of fire services and then subsequent to the event, the ongoing provision of services to county residents. And then finally, we'll also do a review of the costs that have been incurred as a result of the fire. I'm going to anticipate one of your questions is going to be, when's it going to be done? We are trying to get three other reports out the door. The report on alternatives to incarceration we think is imminent. We'll get that in your hands soon. We're also trying to wrap up work on paratransit services and General Mitchell. There's some employment or employee issues that we're dealing with. But we have started this review, and the timing on the completion, it always depends on the level of cooperation and the level of detail we're able to get our hands on. Sometimes you turn over a rock and you find the answer. Sometimes you turn over a rock and you find a bunch of other rocks that need to be turned over. So we will move on it with some urgency, but as usual, it won't be fast, but it will be hopefully accurate and complete. We don't do quick and dirty, but we'll get you some answers. And if you have any questions at this time, I'd be happy to answer.
Supervisor Weishaar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hare, I would just hope that also what would be included, I guess, is wasn't quite clear from your statement, a run-up, too, because I think it's important that we get some answers of why our previous facilities manager was terminated prior to this, and whether or not there was a gap in leadership that led to some mistakes being made. The fact is we can't always run on autopilot, and that we need to find, when you're going to, say, change leadership, you have to make some exceptions for that transition.
Supervisor Borkowski.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could maybe ask Mr. Tyler to come forward. I'm not sure Mr. Hare could address these questions. I had some on when the building is going to be up and running, that kind of thing.
Okay. Mr. Hare, you...
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, thanks for the opportunity to visit today. I just want to speak to that. We have...
Just for the listening audience, you are?
Don Tyler.
Thank you. Always helpful.
Yep. And, you know, we are prepared to give a verbal update this morning. So when that's the time is appropriate, we'll kick in on that.
Were there more questions for Mr. Hare? This time, otherwise he's still here.
It's informational, and just so you all know that we are engaged in conducting the work.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Tyler, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you. Before I provide our verbal update relative to the courthouse fire, I just want to do a little commentary if I could, and that's just simply to acknowledge this core group here, Julie Esch, Dennis Dietcher, and Gary Wozak, relative to what they accomplished during this critical period of time, not only this group, but the group behind them and all of the county employees that were affected, and how well they responded and reacted to this crisis was remarkable, and it's something that I think that we all should be proud of in terms of how everybody responded to this emergency. So what I'd like to do is cover this topic by myself providing a general update, and then Dennis and Gary will be here to respond to any questions that you might have that I can't answer, and maybe backfill some of my comments. So that's kind of the way we're going to approach this, if that's okay.
Sounds good.
What I'd like to do is cover four specific areas. The first one as it relates to business continuity. The second one as it relates to power to the facilities. The third one is related to restoration of the facilities. And then finally, the insurance. So those are the four things that I'd like to cover with you this morning. First of all, as it relates to the electrical fire, obviously it happened on July 6th. I think everybody knows that. It affected three buildings that comprised about 1.5 million square feet of space, the courthouse, the CJF, and the safety building. Smoke damage was limited to the courthouse and the skywalk, and that was approximately 1 million square feet of space. To put that in context, the courthouse, which is not very many people realize, is about the same size as the U.S. Bank building. So it's a significant size that was affected by the smoke damage. In addition to that, approximately 1,200 county, state, and other agency employees and public were affected by this fire. From a continuity standpoint, in terms of what the process was there, there was a group of key stakeholders that engaged very quickly. Obviously, Dennis Dietcher in his role in risk management, and Gary Wozak in his role as the facilities director was engaged immediately in the process. But importantly, there was a continuity task force that was established. It began in an informal dialogue in the beginning of Saturday, midday, beginning with the county executive, myself, Gary Wozak, and Dennis Dietcher. This formal team expanded and came together then early Sunday morning to start mapping out a continuity plan relative to what we've got ahead of us in terms of facilities. It evolved into daily meetings of all key stakeholders where we were meeting on a daily basis, originally at city campus and then eventually evolving to the courthouse cafeteria. And those stakeholders included various departments, county departments, the sheriff's office, the MPD, the board, courts and clerks, et cetera. And we met daily to kind of go through a summary of activities the previous day, kind of give a status in terms of where we're headed, and getting a report from each of the department heads in terms of some of the issues that they had. We also invited the supervisors to a tour of the courthouse directly after the courthouse fire, so you can get a sense of what was involved. And three of the supervisors took us up on that invitation. I just want to point out also that one of the business continuity efforts was basically relocating our services that are typically delivered to the public or things that we need to do as employees to get the job done. And from a continuity perspective, the relocation efforts, again, I would put into the category of remarkable. All of the various departments stepped up to the plate on their own and found space either at COGS or City Campus or BHD or other locations. And it was really kind of a remarkable effort on all of the department's part to get into this kind of can-do attitude and keep business going, even in light of this unfortunate event. So like I said, COG, City Campus, CGAF, and BHD all shared facilities, and it was, again, remarkable to see those folks at COGS step up and say, hey, we've got 20 cubes here that we can offer up, and City Campus as well. I think City Campus was where the comptroller's office sat for several weeks, and it was a seamless transition on their part. Most areas were up and running as a result of that, really, in the first week after the fire. And as power was restored, we layered on the services back to the courthouse. It was kind of done in a kind of a strategic fashion, making sure that we didn't overload the power issues and challenges that we had before us. Regarding power, I just want to acknowledge Peeper and We Energies relative to their effort. They were our primary electrical contractors and actually still are. They helped us tremendously and continue to help us tremendously as we get back to permanent power. Our first priority when the power went off was obviously to make sure that the jail was up and running, and the backup generator system worked just fine, so the jail never went down. We were without AC and refrigeration during that period of time, and the number one priority was to get the jail back to some kind of permanent power, get it off generator power. And We Energies worked very hard throughout the afternoon on Saturday, and I was down there with Gary Wozak and Steve Jensen from We Energies down in where the electrical fire was, and it was still very smoky and pitch black in there. And it was amazing to see Steve Jensen from We Energies looking at all the different panels and then concluding, here's a panel, I think we can get the line shifted for the jail, and I think we can get that done in 24 hours. He, in fact, got it done in 8 hours. So we had the jail up and running with permanent power within 8 hours of the event. Their second priority was to get generator power to the safety buildings and the courthouse. The safety building was on generator power by 4 p.m. on July 8th on a limited basis, and the courthouse was on limited generator power by 5 p.m. on July 8th. Our third priority was to get back on the grid through a temporary solution, and that was achieved by July 20th. I won't go into all the details in terms of how that occurred, but again, I go back to some of the innovation and creativity of all of these teams as to how they did that, and it was just kind of a remarkable minor miracle. Our current priority is to engineer, design, and install our new power supply so that we can get back to permanent power. And that is slated for the December/January timeframe. So I want to emphasize right now that we are not on a permanent power solution. We are back on the grid, that's true, but we are still in a temporary and very tenuous position because the power, and Dennis can go into this more detail if you like, the power supply is coming through a manhole on 10th Street, and it's very tenuous. It's up and running, we're doing just fine, but it's still a very tenuous position until we get to our permanent power solution. And again, like I say, that is slated for December, January. From a restoration perspective, there's a company called Universal, and that is our primary contractor for the effort. One of the first and most important things that we wanted to do was make sure that we continuously tested the air quality to make sure that there weren't any issues relative to air. We confirmed very quickly that there were no air quality or smoke damage issues in the CGAF and safety building. That allowed us to actually vacate, or I mean, actually bring people back into those buildings sooner than in the courthouse. As a precaution, all of the workers in the courthouse, and what I'm talking about when I say workers, I'm talking about the contractors that were doing the cleanup, Gary, Dennis, and myself, were all required to wear masks until air quality was tested and confirmed safe. Smoke and soot permeated every floor of the courthouse, so comprehensive surface cleaning and air scrubbing was required, including HVAC ductwork and over 1,000 filters replaced. Public had access to the courthouse only after air quality testing, including for asbestos, was completed. And I want to take a time out here, and I understand that there might be some questions relative to asbestos. And I'm going to ask Dennis Dietcher to kind of respond to that question in terms of what the process was to test for asbestos and whether there was any kind of fire issue relative to asbestos. So, Dennis?
Okay, Dennis Dietcher, Risk Management. And, you know, our concern for the environmental aspects of the building was high, obviously. And so the first thing that we did was everything that was damaged by the fire was tested and was confirmed that none of it contained asbestos. Now, this was done by outside environmental agency. And so after we confirmed that, the next thing was to coordinate through all of the aspects of the project the environmental analysis as we would go and do different things. Environmental led the way. And so the idea was, you know, don't disturb until we look at, until we confirm one way or another that whatever we're going to do is not going to cause any additional environmental concerns. And so all of those things happened, and we progressed as we received clearance to do so, up into and including the occupancy for the buildings.
As it relates to soot damage, there was limited soot and smoke damage on the first four floors of the courthouse, requiring carpet and ceiling tile replacement. And I just want to emphasize that we scrubbed all of the floors, cleaned the floors and scrubbed the HVAC system and so forth. But the soot and smoke damage was limited to the first four floors predominantly because of the elevator shafts and how the smoke went through the elevator shafts. In addition to the carpet and ceiling replacement, we also did and have continued to do a lot of painting in the common areas and stairways. From the standpoint of insurance coverage, now some shifting into the other point, insurance coverage, the insurance provider, I think some people perceive that it was County Mutual that is the provider. In fact, it's actually the insurance provider, Local Government Property Insurance Fund. This is a group that's managed out of Madison through the state, through the Office of the Insurance Commissioner. Brent Hansen, just so you know, is the individual that is our primary contact with the fund, and it's safe to say that she's been with us, if not on a daily basis in the beginning, at least on a weekly basis on this going forward. The insurance adjuster, which is hired by the fund itself, is Crawford Insurance, and they've had an individual on the site virtually every day in the first several weeks, I would imagine, and probably less so now. The reinsurer that backs up the fund is Lexington Insurance. In terms of proceeds to this point, we've received slightly less than $6 million thus far from the fund to cover costs related to power recovery and restoration. Those payments then flow to Universal, and then Universal is responsible for paying all of the subcontractors. The cleaning, they provide cleaning services themselves, but they also provide or work with subcontractors, PEEPER and WE Energies and so forth. We've made payments to Universal to about $5.25 million thus far. We are still not in a position to estimate the total cost. I wish I could do better on that, but we're not in a position to really identify what the total costs are going to be. But thus far, like I said, we've received $6 million approximately from the fund, and about 5.25 of that has flowed out through Universal to pay the various contractors. Cause of origin is the next thing I wanted to speak to. The insurance provider is actually responsible to complete the investigation. I know historically, years past, perhaps it was the fire department that was responsible. The fire department has confirmed that from their vantage point, there was no arson. But it's the insurance provider that does the investigation. The protocol, as I understand it, is that the states ask the State Department of Justice to establish the process and procedure. My understanding that that's a typical process. What they do then is wall off the site and secure it, which we have done. I don't want to say that it's impossible to gain access, but it's locked and sealed, the area where the fire was. We coordinate a secure collection and removal of all of the material at origin. We secure off-site and complete forensics research, maintaining the chain of evidence. And then it's reported back to the insurance fund. If cause due to other parties, the insurer may have recourse to pursue subrogation and reimbursement of expenses from the manufacturer or vendors. I'm sure you're going to have some questions about that, and Dennis will be able to respond to you to the extent possible. But right now the process is this, is that the insurer is responsible for the investigation. That investigation is ongoing as we speak. And at some point in time, there will be a report made available. In terms of possible losses not covered, I think that that's a question that people have. Thus far, we have not been told by the insurer that there's any costs that will not be covered, that will not be covered by insurance. It's possible that there will be some costs that will not be covered, but they're likely to be due to equipment that perhaps was not maintained, or there might be some costs that would be associated with us discovering something that needs to be fixed in the whole process, and that wasn't as a result of the fire, but we needed to fix it just the same. And since the ceiling tiles are open, we make that fix at that point. Our current situation, and then we can open it up for questions, is from a continuity standpoint, this team, it's a much smaller continuity task force right now, but they still meet at 10 a.m. Every morning with Universal, with PEEPER, with the Sheriff's Office. One thing I failed to mention, the Sheriff's Office has been fantastic through all of this. Deb Burmeister, I should say Major Burmeister, has been there arm in arm with us along the whole way and has done a fantastic job. Anyway, they meet on a daily basis at 10 a.m., and then they provide updates with me on a daily basis. 10th Street exit, and this is the exit from the building, will continue to be walled off until we get this power, permanent power installed. And like I said, that time frame is expected to be in the December-January time frame. Annex parking will continue to have limited access to the supervisors and judges due to the high risk around the temporary power. I did talk to the insurance commissioner last week to see if there was any flexibility of opening up the annex parking to more individuals on the south side. And they continue to be, and Dennis continues to confirm this with me loud and clear, that we are still very vulnerable in having our power go through that manhole on 10th Street, and it's important to keep the parking lot closed on the south side of the annex parking. And the insurance commissioner confirmed that with us as well. We are continuing to encourage limited use of personal appliances, and that continues to be a challenge for us. I always talk about the fact that we're one cup of coffee away from having this whole thing come down. That is still very much true. I think that Dennis would reemphasize that. From a power perspective, engineering and manufacturing of the new power system is in progress. Again, we will actually begin to disassemble the damaged power supply in October, and you're going to start seeing a lot of activity on 10th Street sometime early November. We're going to basically have to lift up the sidewalk area and start bringing stuff down into the basement of the courthouse, and I'm sure Dennis can elaborate and Gary can elaborate on that. Finally, restoration. Virtually, I think all of the ceiling tiles and the carpeting that needs to be replaced or is replaced. We're just going through the finishing touches on the carpeting. Lastly, I just wanted to let you know that the insurance commissioner wanted me to pass on to you guys that if you have any specific questions related to the insurance claims, they would like to get that in writing, and they'd be willing to respond to you in that way. So those are my remarks. Thank you.
Supervisor Broderick. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think we all agree that the response of our employees was nothing short of terrific, efficient, and expert in handling the aftermath. But I think a more basic question is really, was this a preventable event? And what have we learned from it that will guide our future institutional behavior and priorities? It seems, from what we understand, absent the audit report at this point, that ultimately this may be attributable to deferred maintenance and not appropriately dealing with the replacement of the malfunctioning parts that ultimately led to the cause of the fire. And while I will certainly await the report of audit with some anticipation, I guess that is a basic question that I haven't heard reference to. Was this preventable, given what we know of the reasons for its cause?
Mr. Chair, supervisors, I think that's a logical question to ask, and I wish I could be more forthright in my response. But the cause and origin is still under investigation, so I really can't be as responsive as perhaps you would like me to be. I will tell you this, at this juncture, I think it's just pure conjecture that the cause of this is related to deferred maintenance. While the investigation is going on, we have no indication at this point what the cause is. So I would say deferred maintenance is something that we will look at, but it's just conjecture to make that assumption at this point.
Well, certainly, Mr. Chairman, we'll hope it was not the case.
Other questions? When you say, Ms. Tyler, that still under investigation, I understand that. What are we able to say? I mean, we know nothing about the cause and origin, do we know the specific piece of equipment that first caught fire, or we know anything? I feel like we know very little 60 days later, other than we know everything after the fire.
Mr. Chair, supervisors, I'm going to ask Gary and Dennis to see if they might have anything to add. We certainly know generally that there was a fire in the electrical supply area. We don't know what the cause of that is, and the insurance company is responsible for doing the investigation. There will be tremendous learnings out of this for sure. Acknowledge the employees have done a remarkable job, but that's not to say that we couldn't do a better job. So there will be tremendous learnings about this. And we'll take action on that. But as it relates specifically to, more as it relates to the cause, I'm going to see if Gary or Dennis might be able to speak to a little bit more about the investigative work. And
Chairman, supervisors, without knowing specifically what caused it, because there is significant fire damage, there was obviously a source of fire. It was limited to the electrical fire. There was no structure or other building fire involved. And that origin, and then as it either progressed or moved from that initial area, was visually obvious in looking, but as far as the infrastructure and exactly what caused it and how that then either cascaded to the next piece, I don't have that answer. That's something with Pieper Electric and We Energies and the larger investigation that's being looked at.
Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all the hacking that's been going on across the country, is there a possibility that control systems were compromised? Was there a possibility that electrical systems were compromised through some outside entity?
Chairman, supervisors, not being an expert on the virtual world, I don't think so, because that system's not controlled on the grid by you know, such computers, not like power plants and things like that.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Rainey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier in your remarks, you stated that an outside environmental agency conducted the study for asbestos. Can you identify that agency?
It was indoor air quality.
Thank you.
Is that it? Supervisor Staskunas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure, is it Crawford Insurance? Are they the folks who are doing or heading the investigation? Are they ultimately the ones who are going to make the call on the cause, or did I miss that?
Okay, the Local Government Property Insurance Fund, they are working directly with both Crawford and an outside cause and origin agency. And they want to get to the bottom of what the cause was just as much as the rest of us. And there are, you know, potential legal related things that could come up from that. Not that there will be, not that there won't be, but the cause and origin is very, very significant. There's a lot of money at stake that the insurance company is you know, through the policy, paying for the things to be fixed here at the county. And so, you know, they want to determine, and they need to determine for the rest of the policy holders, what the cause and the origin was. This was a very significant catastrophic fire event that occurred as the electricity enters our building and enters our system. The gear, our boxes, actually contained this catastrophic fire, of which if we would not have had the gear and the systems that we had, it could have been much worse. And so it's very difficult to speculate about cause and origin, but there are experts involved from the insurance company perspective that it is their task to come up with, if they can, what the cause and origin is. And until they do, it's very, very, very difficult to speculate. We ourselves have not found any cause amongst ourselves, and but there was a tremendous amount of damage, and a lot of the electrical gear has been damaged and has been burned away, and that will add to the difficulty of the decision-making process for cause and origin.
And Crawford, as you said, they employed another agency. Is that a government agency involved in this, or is that another insurance carrier that Crawford is working with?
Okay, let me explain a little bit further to answer that question. Crawford is under contract with the Local Government Property Insurance Fund to do all of the claims adjusting for all of the losses that are that occur within all of the policy holders. So this is one of their losses, just like it would be if it was a smaller one or whatever. So Crawford is the adjusting arm of the Local Government Property Insurance Fund.
And you said that they had hired someone to help them determine the cause?
A cause and origin agency has been hired by the fund and Crawford. Okay.
Is that another insurance company, or is that?
No, it's a cause and origin specific company that they go through. There are people that specialize in this.
Okay. And then, not really a question, but then my last comment. There is a lot of money at stake here. And again, I'm not speculating. I don't know what caused this fire. But I do know that insurance companies don't like paying out claims. And my question for you folks is, that's great that the local government insurance company, who we apparently pay premiums to, has hired Crawford, and Crawford has hired this cause and origin company. Are we involved in this investigation? Have we hired our own expert? Because let's just say that they have a vested interest to come back and say that it was deferred maintenance, because that means that we pay the freight, not them. And I don't know how that, I you know Mr. Tyler talked about that we've already received $6 million and doled out a little over $5 million. Well, I don't really want to repay that. So I'm just wondering, how involved, are we involved at all And if not, I'd like us to be involved because I don't want a report coming back from Crawford and their cause and origin company saying XYZ and, hey, Milwaukee County, you're on the hook, and we didn't even participate. So can you tell me, are we participating? Are we looking over Crawford's shoulder? Are we going to just, on blind faith, rely on this cause and origin company when they come back with a report saying it's all deferred maintenance and, by the way, give us our $6 million back?
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, this loss is a covered peril. This loss is a covered peril in spite of what any cause and origin is going to come up with, because that's how the policy is written. And if, in fact, though, that they come back with something that says, you know, this one piece right here that failed, you know, this piece is the one we're not going to cover, it's relatively minuscule on in the scheme of things. However, again, we have no reason to believe that that's going to happen. The answer to your other question is, have we hired our own cause and origin specialist to watch what their cause and origin specialist is going to do? We have not done that yet. We talked to Corporation Counsel early on about that, and if in fact we should be preparing ourselves for that. But at that time, the answer was we didn't feel that we had the need to do that simply because of the policy and of the coverage. We can revisit that and determine if that's necessary or not. Right now, we are coordinating the loss in a team effort with the Property Insurance Fund. And at this point, and again, we can reconsider that and the potential value of that, but we have not had the need to look at doing that at this point.
Okay, and I get that. So I guess that's the good news is that, I mean, we do want to establish, obviously, the correct cause and origin, but from a pure fiscal Milwaukee County part, it really doesn't matter what the cause and origin is. We've paid our premiums, we're covered, and money-wise, we're covered. Yes, ultimately, we'll all have time to talk about cause and origin and, you know, if it could have been prevented, but money-wise, we're covered. That's what I'm hearing.
You are correct.
Okay.
And believe me, if I thought the need was there for us to protect ourselves by doing exactly what you're talking about, getting another expert in here, I would have addressed that when I talked to Mark Grady a month or so ago about that very specific thing. We should bring our own in. But at this point, again, as of right today, I still don't have a need to do that. I can revisit again, though, with the fund. Their cause and origin, as it would relate to something that they would be saying, hey, we're not going to pay for this. I have already requested of them that when the time comes, they are to share their report with us so that we have that and we can see why, if in fact they would be doing something like denying part of the claim. We have received no reservation of rights letter for them to be denying any aspect of the claim. They would have to present us with that, and I have not received that. And that would be just, in fact, if they were thinking about doing that, they would need to give us a notice, of which we have not received anything.
Thank you.
Other questions from committee? Described as a catastrophic fire event, and yet some of the accounts of how it first was noticed or not noticed seem to describe that perhaps the response was that people thought this was just a false alarm, and I'm wondering what we know about how the alarms sounded, or whether do we have that many false alarms, I guess, that when we had a catastrophic event, no one believed it. It sounded like there was a significant delay. Is there anything that we know about that other than what I read in the newspaper?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I'm going to ask Gary to respond to the extent that he can on that, because we're still under investigation. But I think what you've read in the newspapers is not entirely accurate, but it's and I haven't heard there was this issue as to, you know, false alarms. I have not heard that before. Okay. So that's new information to me. I don't think it's necessarily accurate. I think the alarm system went off as it was supposed to. And that's, I think, all I want to say right now. I don't know, maybe Gary's got something else to say.
But generally, one of the results of the fire was power loss. And that in itself would create some problems. Given the fact that on a daily basis, we do have a lot of alarms that come in on the system, the Honeywell system, that whether it's a duress button or smokehead or any other alarm that comes in.
What was the first one?
Duress button. Those are the buttons underneath. Yes. Mm-hmm. For security, thank you. We do get a lot of alarms, and as you, I'm sure you know, we have false alarms where we evacuate the building. False alarms may be a contractor working in an elevator shaft and some vapors set off the smokehead, and anybody that works in the building knows that we occasionally have them. When we go back and review the reports to try to determine the timing and again, confirm that we had a solvent or somebody was welding in the basement and forgot to take the necessary precautions as far as notifying everybody. We have to weed out all the other alarms. With the three buildings and the jail itself, it's not lost in a maze of just overwhelming information, but quite often when we look at something that is a known event, we are pulling out the kind of other alarms, the chatter alarms that are in there that are equally looked at. So I am going to provide a little conjecture here and say that when the alarms go off in any situation, there is an investigative response, whether it's the sheriff's department calling maintenance on the radio for them to check out whatever that alarm may be. And that's just what we do when the alarms come in. So not being here at the time, not being the one on the radio getting the call or the one that's making the call, but knowing from past history, there would have been an initial alarm and an initial call out to investigate that alarm. That happens on any situation.
There was Mr. Tyler. You said, you know, I can't believe everything I read. Was the timeline that there was a 20 or 25 minute delay? Was that portion accurate from the time of the first alarm to when the fire department is ultimately called?
I am going to look to Gary on this, but I'm also going to look to Mark Grady and make sure we're comfortable in communicating something a little bit more on this.
Attorney Grady?
Mr. Chairman, I do believe this is, if you have an answer or something, because it really doesn't go to cause of fire, it's post-fire, so I think it's safe to discuss if you have an answer.
I can't specifically answer. I don't know when and how that call was made, and that would not be done by facilities. So I don't know when that call was made, and again, not being in that process, when I'm here in the building and an alarm goes off during the day, the first thing that I do is try to get in touch with staff to determine what the cause of that alarm is so we can clear it and get everybody back in the building. That's our normal false alarm. Usually in that process, I'm meeting or facility staff is meeting the fire department on 10th Street to coordinate that process to clear the alarm. And again, that wasn't this situation, but on every other alarm we have, which is an evacuation. So not being the one that makes that call or being on the other end of the radio, that there had to be some communications between those on the other end of the radio that were investigating and those receiving the alarms or knowing that there's a power outage. I don't have that exact timing. I know from our standpoint, you know, how things started on the computer system, that, you know, there was an initial event of power loss and how things went from there, but how that interacts with the Sheriff's Department. As part of that cause and origin investigation, I've been providing our information so that that can then be paired up with everything from the physical pieces to the other information that other parties are providing. Not this event, but every other one, I'm the one that would do that. I would be the one answering, well, how did this false alarm happen? How did this sprinkler head get falsely activated and so forth? But again, on this investigation, I'm providing the information relative to facilities. So I can't answer to the whole set of timing.
Okay. Does anyone know sort of how the scenario goes down? So the initial alarms are loss of power. At what point do we get fire alarms, smoke alarms? When do we verify that there, or who verifies that there was smoke or that there was a fire? At what point? I guess I'm not understanding. You're telling me sort of the typical way it should happen.
For this event,
yes.
Having looked at the report, I'd say it was a pretty logical cascade of alarms and signals coming in on the Honeywell system, from the initial power loss and outward incoming alarms from smoke heads in the building. It looked like a logical sequence of
there's a real event.
Yeah, of a fire in the basement, and as things progress, and how that timing interplays with a call that was made to the fire department and the response and everything else. I don't have that. Again, providing our information to the investigative individuals, it makes sense to me, but I'm not putting together the whole investigation.
That's because on the weekend, no one from facilities is here, or so your department wasn't involved, or
on the weekend we have 24/7 coverage, and on the weekends and evenings we have one shift person that's available. You know, they're in the complex, contacted by radio. So there was somebody on site, and they were called on the radio to investigate. But they were off, again, keeping busy doing whatever they were keeping busy that day, which I believe was outside doing some cleanup in the annex lot, because there's no vehicles in there. It's easier to do it on the weekend. So there's, you know, there is somebody here, but it's one person.
Supervisor Rainey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tyler, considering the unexpected nature of this event, would it be a good idea for Milwaukee County to conduct the audit of its facilities to determine if any other facilities are at risk of such occurrences?
Mr. Chair and supervisors, I think that I'm going to again look to Gary in terms of what our process is, in terms of tracking our, you know, the quality of our facilities, and maybe even look to Dennis on this. But I think that to your question, the answer is yes. I'm sure that'll be one of the learnings that will come out of this. You know, what are we doing currently, and how does that benchmark to some of the learnings that will come out of this experience? And, you know, I think there's things that we're doing now, but I think we'll have some learnings that will shore up, you know, what we're doing currently. I'm going to see if there's any other thoughts that my team has.
No, again, just to echo what Mr. Tyler said, is yes, and as is the case after any event, there is a review of other areas, and in fact, within the complex here, that's part of the process, is looking at the other electrical infrastructure, and trying to determine, again, trying to be preventive after the fact as much as possible, and then tying that into the larger picture of what already exists in the county as far as the maintenance review and maintenance inspections and the larger building inspections that are ongoing.
I just want to emphasize that I think right now the learnings would probably be more focused on continuity. We don't know, again, what the cause of this is and whether there was any maintenance issues that were related to the cause. To the extent that, you know, there was something like that that was identified, there's certainly some learnings then out of that, but we don't know of any learnings out of that at this point. But I'd say that, you know, some of the learnings that we know of today relate to business continuity, and we could do better in other facilities.
How regularly does Milwaukee County conduct an audit on its facilities, say the domes or the museum? Do you annually go through the facilities and make sure there's not deferred maintenance, or how does something like this slip from your purview?
Well, what I think every department does is tries to prioritize as best they can the work that they have, whether it's a roof or roof repair, I'm sorry, or mechanical or electric or anything that's out there. I think everybody tries to best prioritize with the dollars given what needs to be done. And with the capital process and ranking and evaluation process, that all comes into play.
Chairman and committee members, let me mention this also. We also, one of our commercial insurance policies is for boiler and machinery. And currently, our insurer for that is Cincinnati Insurance. And along with that policy and that coverage comes inspection services. And so all of the state registered boilers and pressure vessels are on a schedule for us to inspect on a regular basis, and that is being performed. I work very closely with Lynn Smith, who is the provider of both the insurance and the inspection services, and he has been here to our facility in regards to the equipment that is in the basement. Some of the coverage will fall to Cincinnati Insurance, of which we have a joint loss agreement with the local government property insurance fund, and back to Cincinnati. And so he is a very diligent inspection person. And from the perspective of the boiler and machinery aspects, I can tell you that when he inspects, if there are any at all deficiencies, he notifies me immediately, and we process any corrective action immediately. And he runs a very, very tight ship because they don't want to have any losses that fall to their policy. And so, and we don't want to have any losses that would result, for instance, in, you know, a boiler-related, you know, explosion, things like that. So from a boiler and machinery perspective, we have a separate policy for that. We have a separate inspection services for that, and that's a very, very tight ship that we have for inspection and maintenance of all of those things.
Yes. I could, on Supervisor Rainey's point.
Mr. Hare.
Whether or not deferred maintenance is in play at all on this fire, I think, is a big question that remains to be answered. But the fundamental concern that our office has about the maintenance of county properties is a matter of record. The report we did after a chunk of the courthouse fell off one night, report we did after the tragedy of O'Donnell Park, the report we did at your request on deferred maintenance within the Parks Department, we have significant maintenance needs. One of the things that you did to help move in the direction of getting a handle on that was to streamline from 7 property management functions down to 1. And that's now in DOS facilities management, so there's a central coordination of maintenance across the county. There is a huge barrier, I think, to a more robust effort on the part of facilities management, and that's a whole question of, and this is sort of apart from inspecting, it goes more to maintaining. You spend $450,000 on the CBRE report that itemizes for many of our buildings what needs to be done with fire safety, plumbing, electrical, structural, all those fundamentals of keeping a building safe. But we first need to decide as a government which of those buildings we're going to own, occupy, sell, demolish, convey to other use. And it's kind of a chicken and eggs thing. You don't want to be one of those governments where you pump $5 million into a building and then give it away for $1 million the next year. On the other hand, if you've got a building that people are occupying on a daily basis, it needs to be safe. So beyond this issue of the fire and even beyond the issue of deferred maintenance, we need to make some hard decisions about property, what we're going to own, what we're going to occupy, what we're going to rent, what we're going to sell, demolish, whatever.
Mr. Hare, you bring up the CBRE report, and I think Mr. Tyler's explanation of the recovery in many ways leaned on the fact that we had excess capacity. I think that aided in the days after the event, and it does bring some question in my mind whether or not the strategy of a sort of courthouse-only courthouse campus consolidation, where everything would almost everything would be here, and we would divest ourselves of satellite locations, whether that there's some strategic flaw in that, in events like this, where the effects would just be exacerbated if you had a single facility go down and no one could come to work for, I mean, from July to January, you're not back up on power or whatever, you know. Does anyone else share that concern that strategy has some inherent risk?
Mr. Chair and supervisors, that certainly speaks to business continuity and other public organizations and private sector may centralize a lot of their functions, but certainly have a continuity plan in place that speaks to a solution, and that would certainly be part of this effort. I don't visualize us consolidating all of our operations into the courthouse specifically, but certainly a courthouse campus is a nice vision. And I'm going to ask Dennis to speak to some of the creativity that went on as it relates to constructing the power system so there's a little bit more redundancy on a going forward basis, which I think is pretty cool in terms of what his team and Gary's team and A&E and We Energies and Piper has come up with that helps on business continuity. As it relates to Mr. Hare's comments, I echo those comments. We have some tough decisions to continue to be made in terms of deferred maintenance items. And in our capital spend project through the budget process that's going to be coming up, one of the things that is a top priority for us is safety issues and making sure that we spend appropriately in our capital budget to make sure that we're making sure that we've got a safe and secure place for the public and the employees.
If I could just add in real quick, Chairman, a couple of discussions we had on the business continuity and having that space available for this event specifically, going back a little further when we were having discussions on pandemic and continuity, space like that, I don't know if having excess space or lack of available space is even relative in something like that. So it falls back into the business continuity, and that was something that, again, Don had brought up to me as far as the business continuity, trying to look at a global response, whether it's a physical event like this or, again, something that's more pandemic. So there's a larger discussion with that, but.
Supervisor Rainey.
Real quick, at any point in time, was there any asbestos at all found inside of the courthouse following the fire?
Okay. So in the courthouse, the question is, was there any asbestos found? There's asbestos, but then there's friable asbestos. So when we come to restore, we want to make sure that we check, for instance, under the carpet. Is there tile? Is there any mastic involved, and do we know yet if in fact that is asbestos containing material or not? If it is all in one piece, we can pull the carpet up, none of it's secured to the previous floor. We have a system that is not friable. Okay, let's say, though, that we pull it up, and now when you pull it up, it takes some of the tile off with it. Okay, well, that in itself is now more of a risk to become friable. So as we would progress throughout...
Friable is the friable fibers become airborne, right?
Yes, correct. Capable of being changed into a condition that could create a friable condition. Okay? Go ahead if you had something, Gary.
Chairman, supervisors, there are materials in the building that contain asbestos. When we do window replacement, steam leaks in the walls, there's pipe wrappings. The building is of age that there are those materials, and any time we do work prior to this event on smaller scale, again, steam leaks, floor replacement, windows, that is a process of testing that's involved in every project we do, and it was equally addressed in this event.
What is the level of risk that the public takes and the staff here in Milwaukee County takes coming through these doors every day?
I don't think there's risk. The level of friability and again, pipe wrappings in the basement, if we were going to replace a section of pipe, we have it removed, abated, and then we have it rewrapped without asbestos-related materials when we repair. It's just a fact of the building. But it's not, again, even with the testing we had after the fire, it's not an airborne concern that it's a concern. And often what we find is the when we do the testing samples, the air outside is the worst, the filters for intake are the next dirtiest, and the cleanest testing we get is our air filters.
I kept sneezing, so I just had to ask that question. Thanks for the clarification.
Mr. Hare.
It had a lot of asbestos, and I can tell you that the standard that they used for testing the air quality in that building was whether it was equal to or less than just standing on the corner of 10th and Wells, and it most usually was at or below those levels. I think the comment that it's cleaner inside, unfortunately there may be some truth to that if they're doing the right testing and the proper removal process.
And we did run into that with one of the window replacements on the light courts. There was concern about asbestos, and we tested, and the levels in the building were less than what's outside in outside air, and I don't know how you can beat that.
Yeah. Mr. Rainey, Supervisor. Other questions, Supervisor? Okay. I do appreciate everyone coming. It was time for some explanation, coming 2 months after the event. And so I do appreciate hearing a little more. I understand where we are in the process a little bit better now. And we await the outcome of those reports. So just to conclude, when you said we were going to start dismantling the scene of the fire, that deconstruction will begin in October, does that mean that's when we expect that the investigation is complete, and so that's when that can begin?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, that's when the heavy-duty work gets done. So it's not going to be completed. What they'll do is transport, securitize and transport all of that material to another location. I believe it's in the Fox Valley somewhere. And then they'll do their investigative work there. I think that from talking to the insurance commissioner, that would be measured in multiple weeks, not months, and then there would be an initial report that would come out of that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I just want to make one more comment regarding leadership. I am so fortunate to have these three individuals. Dennis and Gary in particular, taking the lead role during this period. They put in a tremendous amount of hours, and I would take them in a heartbeat over anybody else. Thank you.
Thank you. Item two, please.